Before we get into this week's story, we've got an update on a story we told back in July of 2019. On the morning of Wednesday, August 31st, 1983, the beaten, sexually assaulted, and strangled body of Susan Eads was found in a ditch on an empty lot in Seabrook, Texas. Susan had spent the night before at a couple local clubs, at the Prickly Pear working a shift, and Jason's Brown Saloon, where she went after to take a load off. At about 1 a.m. when she left the club, she was alone, though witnesses later told police that a man had propositioned her at the bar earlier that evening. A composite sketch was created of this man. Not long after her body was found, Susan's mother began receiving a series of phone calls. Though most were hang-ups, the caller began speaking to her, claiming to have photos and information about Susan. He never stayed on the line long enough for police to trace the call. The case went cold for nearly 37 years before DNA discovered on the ligature used to strangle Susan Eads, a piece of her own clothing, led to a match. Through genetic genealogy, the Texas Department of Public Safety identified Arthur Raymond Davis as Susan's killer. Davis was a Vietnam vet. He was also a local boat captain, and the composite sketch created back in 1983 bears a striking resemblance to the man, down to the exact style of cowboy hat and facial hair. The composite is such a good match, in fact, it's hard to fathom that Davis hadn't already come on the radar of law enforcement back when the sexual assault and murder took place. We were unable to pull up a criminal record for Davis, much less any other information about the man. It's unclear, too, whether police were able to link Davis with the phone calls to Susan's mother. Though it's an answer which hopefully provides Susan's family some relief, Arthur Raymond Davis, unfortunately, will not face justice for what he did to the young woman. About 4 months after raping and killing Susan Eads, 35-year-old Davis died in an auto accident on January 16, 1984, luckily involving no other persons. Since Davis is dead, why he killed Susan and exactly what happened are likely answers lost. The Seabrook Police Department is asking for anyone who knew Arthur Raymond Davis or of his crime against Susan Eads or any other victims to call them at 281-291-5610. Now on to the episode.
The Gone Cold podcast may contain violent or graphic subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
Just to the west of Lavaca Bay in Calhoun County lies the city of Port Lavaca, Texas, about 130 miles southwest of Houston. Port Lavaca is far from Texas's most well-known city, but it is home to plenty of interesting factoids, and numerous spectacular events have taken place there. Events ranging from historic to mysterious to tragic. Much of the city's downtown Art Deco and mid-century architecture still stands miraculously, despite Port Lavaca holding the state's record for the highest wind speed during 1961's Hurricane Carla. Hurricane Beulah touched down in Texas in September 1967, too, and the storm brought with it the destruction of homes, crops, and businesses along the Lone Star State's coastline, and far inland, too, as Beulah's tropical temperatures and devastating wind speeds produced a record number of tornadoes. When the storm was done, little good had resulted from Beulah's fury, of course. But at least one interesting thing came out of it. In Port Lavaca, the bones of an ancient creature were unearthed. The creature was estimated to have lived around 120,000 years before the discovery, and is known scientifically as Eremotherium. In layman's terms, that's a giant ground sloth, a creature whose body stretched 15 feet long, and whose jaw was almost 2 feet in length. The skeleton was one of the most complete ever discovered in North America, where such a discovery was rare in the first place. This find didn't define Port Lavaca in any way, nor did it really seem to excite anyone other than geologists and paleontologists at the time. Other bones that Hurricane Beulah unearthed, remnants of large camel, bison, and soft-shell turtles, garnered about the same level of excitement for locals. Beginning in March of 2013, a terrible mystery began unfolding just outside of Port Lavaca. Someone was killing and mutilating an area couple's sheep. By late October of that year, 21 of Karen and Wayne Dagg's prized Barbados sheep had been found slain. At first, Wayne Dagg's thought predators had killed and dragged off the sheep, until he began finding the bodies. Some were stabbed and some had their throats slashed. One was found in a pond on the Dagg's property, stabbed just behind the ear. Male sheep were castrated, and female sheep had their sexual organs removed. Since the grass around where slain sheep were discovered appeared untouched, no trace of human or predator, the killings, and particularly the mutilations, had the town and surrounding area in a frenzy. When law enforcement threw their hands in the air with bewilderment, the director for the Mutual UFO Network, Charles Stansberg, was called in to investigate. "It could be a man, a wolf, an ET, or anything," Stansberg said. "We're trying to lean towards earthly things." Wayne Dagg's wouldn't comment on his own theory as to what he thought was happening to his beloved sheep. One theory seemingly ruled out by Stansberg, Dagg's, and Calhoun County investigators, though, is that it was no wild animal killing these sheep. The Calhoun County Sheriff recalled working the department in the 70s, saying he'd seen similar things with local, self-proclaimed devil worshippers. They were mutilating cattle, he said, and he wasn't necessarily linking the killing of Dagg's prized Barbados sheep with disciples of Satan. Though it is unclear if any resolution ever came to the case of the slain sheep in Port Lavaca, it appears as though the killings finally stopped, and the likelihood that Satan worshippers or otherworldly visitors had anything to do with it seems slim to none. Other mysteries, however, have haunted Port Lavaca for far longer than the Dagg's Farm sheep mutilations, including the disappearances of Wanda Pretty in 1978, and Kathy Collins in 1981, and perhaps the most notorious unresolved incident in Calhoun County history, the massacre at the Crossroads Tavern. About 2 miles outside of Port Lavaca in Calhoun County, Texas, sat a roadside bar at the intersection of State Highway 35 and Farm to Market Road 2433, called the Crossroads Tavern. The bar was owned by a man named Terry Oglesby, and inside was a jukebox, shuffleboard, and a couple of pool tables. Crossroads Tavern might be considered a dive to some, though in a more niche way than a negative one, but the establishment was unique. In the middle of the open-roomed bar sat an extremely large table where patrons would gather, drink, and tell tales that grew increasingly tall with every beer. There was rarely a heated verbal confrontation at the Crossroads, let alone arguments that turned physical, customers reported. In fact, one regular patron remarked that he'd never seen a fight there at all. The Crossroads Tavern was laid back, and it's really no wonder why. The clientele was largely made up of local farmers and working-class folks from the nearby industrial plants, two groups who were likely too tired from a hard day's work to stir up too much trouble. Besides, most everyone who frequented the bar knew each other and were friendly with one another. The bar opened at 4 p.m. on Wednesdays through Saturdays, and usually closed when things began to die down around midnight. To help draw a crowd on Wednesdays, the Crossroad Tavern had 50-cent beer night. Wednesday, June 24th, 1981, was no different than any other night at the bar. The pool tables and the large gathering table were both swarming with the usual crowd telling the usual stories and whatever new tales they'd experienced that week. At some unknown point, however, the night became anything but ordinary. On Thursday, June 25th, a witness who says he'd left the bar the night before at about 8 p.m. said he drove by on his way to work to see the parking lot filled with police cars and figured Crossroads Tavern had been raided for staying open after hours until he saw an ambulance racing to the scene. Earlier that morning, Merle Baugh awoke to find that her husband, Willard, hadn't made it home. He worked the day before and stopped in at the Crossroads Tavern after, she knew, so she figured the bar would be the best first place to look. When Merle pulled up to Crossroads at about 6:30 a.m., she saw Willard's car in the lot. She parked and entered the bar, discovering a grisly and nightmarish scene inside, a massacre. Her husband, Willard, along with three women, each laid in pools of their own blood on the establishment's floor. Merle called the police. Calhoun County Sheriff's Department deputies arrived at the scene and were appalled at the carnage. On first sight, it appeared all four victims were dead, but 43-year-old William Baugh was still alive, barely clinging to life. He was rushed to Citizens Memorial Hospital in Victoria. Willard had been shot in the back of the head and lower chest, and the expansive, deep laceration across his stomach suggested to investigators at the scene he'd been slashed. William Baugh was in critical condition and placed in the hospital's intensive care unit. The three women found on the floor of the Crossroads Tavern were pronounced dead at the scene. 66-year-old Crossroads Tavern manager Lenny York, 19-year-old Crossroads waitress Marjorie Matoka, and 21-year-old Lark Saylor, a sometimes customer of the bar, were all slain. Each one had been beaten and shot, execution style, with a handgun. The bodies of the three women were removed from the scene, and signs handwritten by law enforcement officers on yellow legal paper with the messages "Stay out" and "Do not enter" were taped to the Crossroads Tavern door. The victims' cars remained in the lot. The pathologist who performed Lenny York, Marjorie Matoka, and Lark Saylor's autopsies determined the time of their death as between midnight and 1:30 a.m. on Thursday, June 25, 1981. The attack at Crossroads Tavern also left 43-year-old Willard Baugh clinging to life at a Victoria, Texas hospital. He and all three women were beaten and shot execution style. Calhoun County Sheriff's Department investigators, who had little to no experience with such a crime, were all but immediately baffled. They were sure that robbery wasn't a motive, because plenty of cash and valuables had been left behind at the scene. Since 50-cent beer night was a popular night at Crossroads Tavern, investigators estimated that there may have been up to 100 people who left fingerprints there that night. Though it's understandable why that fact would have overwhelmed them, the fact that they chose not to take fingerprints at all seems glaringly neglectful. The Crossroads Tavern was never dusted for prints, and the only evidence collected at the scene was 8 spent shell casings. Those and the slugs removed from Lenny, Marjorie, Lark, and Willard would ultimately be the only physical evidence collected. No murder weapon was found, but investigators did spend time looking for a knife that they thought was used to slice open Willard Baugh's stomach. It was later determined, however, that Willard's injuries were the result of the man falling across a broken door hinge as he attempted to reach a telephone. Almost a month after the attack, on Wednesday, July 22, 1981, Willard Baugh became the fourth to have been slain at the hands of the Phantom, who Calhoun County Sheriff's Department investigators were no closer to identifying than they were on day one. Willard died that morning at 9:30 a.m. after undergoing brain surgery and after the town came together, collecting $3,000 for his hospital expenses. Calhoun County Sheriff A.P. Lacey told reporters that Willard had been able to provide useful evidence for the investigation before he passed, and authorities confidently stated that they were, quote, reassessing the evidence and were determined that the case will be solved. It would be almost another year, however, before the massacre at the Crossroads Tavern would be the subject of an article in the press again. In June of 1982, Calhoun County Chief Deputy Sheriff R.J. Renfro told a reporter that the department had a suspect in the Crossroads Tavern murders. The investigation, though quiet in the media, had been highly active for the past year, he said, and though the person responsible for the horror that took place at the bar on June 25, 1981, was still a fugitive from justice, their arrest was imminent. An investigation of this magnitude requires time, diligence, and patience, Chief Deputy Renfro said. Many persons have been interviewed, and that's proved productive. Several suspects were eliminated, and an untold number of leads checked and rechecked. The investigation is most active, and its continuance will result in the persons responsible facing a jury of their peers. Another 9 years went by, however, and not a word, certainly no progress. In June of 1991, then Calhoun County Sheriff Ken Bowden assured the press that the Crossroad Tavern slayings were still at the forefront of the department's mind. The sheriff spoke some about progress they'd made since their last statement to the press. Rumors and theories throughout the community in the years since the crime had led to many new lines of investigation, and some of those had led to good leads. Just 2 years after the Crossroads Tavern massacre, a task force set up to investigate uncovered a stolen vehicle in a storage shed near the bar. Though the sheriff refused to comment on the connection of the men who were charged with felony theft involving that incident, he did tell reporters that one of the men was, quote, a business associate of one of the victims of the Crossroads Tavern murders. An investigator for the Calhoun County District Attorney's Office chased down leads in three states, he said, gathering 3,000 pages worth of reports. About a dozen felony charges were filed as the result of his investigation, some federal, though all the charges were unrelated to the murders. After 30 individuals were given polygraphs with questions directly related to the Crossroads Tavern murders, and more than 90 days of grand jury special sessions that involved many agencies, including the Texas Rangers, the Federal Bureau of Investigations, and the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, the case is seemingly no closer to resolution now than it was in 1981. Victim Lenny Lorraine York, the 66-year-old manager at Crossroads Tavern, was born on January 22, 1915, in Broadus, Texas, to parents George and Sally Roberts. She married Clarence Edward York, known to most as Jack, in 1937, and the two were together until his death in 1974. Lenny lived on Magnolia Beach, about 10 miles away from the Crossroads Tavern, where she managed every evening it was open. Patrons of the bar unanimously described Lenny as the nicest person you'd ever meet. Her cause of death is listed as a blow to the back of her skull and gunshot wound to the lower chest. Victim Willard Willis Bow Sr. was 43 years old when he died. He was born on June 16, 1938, in Rochester, Minnesota, but grew up in Alto, Texas. Willard married his wife, Merle, in 1972. The couple had two sons, Willard Jr. and Carl, and a daughter who died at only 2 months old. Willard wasn't a regular at Crossroads Tavern, but every once in a while would stop in to shoot a game of pool or two and have a couple beers. He owned Willard's Paint and Body Shop. Willard was shot in the head, abdomen, and chest. He sustained a major injury to his abdomen as he attempted to get help and died almost a month after the attack at the Crossroads Tavern from, quote, overwhelming sepsis. 21-year-old victim Viva Lark Saylor was born on January 22, 1960, in Calhoun County to parents Sam and Viva Lark Saylor. Named, obviously, after her mother, she went by her middle name, Lark. She graduated from Calhoun High in 1978, where she was an active member of the Spirit Club. Lark didn't usually stay at the Crossroads Tavern past 8 p.m., and only stopped by once a week after working a shift at the Aransas Wildlife Refuge for a few beers. Lark died of multiple gunshot wounds. Marjorie Faye Matoka was born Marjorie Sheffield in New York on May 5, 1962. The 19-year-old Crossroads Tavern waitress only moved to the Calhoun County, Texas area in May of 1979 from Miami. She graduated from Calhoun High in 1980, marrying Robert A. Matoka not long after. Marjorie, everyone said, got along with her friends and customers well and naturally. She died from gunshot wounds to the back and cheek. 3 years before the tragedy at Crossroads Tavern, another took place in Port Lavaca. Wanda Leanne Miller grew up in Harlingen, Texas. She was known by her nickname, Wendy. Wanda attended and graduated from Harlingen High there in 1976, having made good grades throughout her academic career. Not even a year after graduating, in January of 1977, she married Fred Pretty and became Wanda Pretty. The newlyweds moved to Port Lavaca not long after tying the knot, renting an apartment on the 200 block of South Nueces Street. After moving there, a week never went by that Wanda didn't call her parents, Bruce and Janice, even if she had to make the call collect. Fred Pretty was working for a chemical manufacturer in Palacios, about 30 miles east, across Lavaca Bay, on the overnight shift. On the afternoon of Monday, August 28, 1978, Fred's friend and co-worker arrived at his and Wanda's apartment to pick him up for work. The friend spoke with Wanda as Fred finished getting his things and later said that she was in good spirits. The two talked and laughed together. When Fred finished his shift and returned home at about 6:30 a.m., Wanda was nowhere to be seen. The door to the couple's apartment was wide open. Wanda's purse and keys were still inside, and her car still in the parking lot. There were no signs of forced entry or a disturbance of any kind. Fred Pretty reported his wife missing. He'd last seen her in a multicolored halter top, jeans, and barefoot, he reported. The only clothing that couldn't be accounted for, Fred told police, was a pair of jeans and a couple t-shirts. In fact, that was the only property she owned of any kind that seemed to be missing. Wanda Leanne Pretty was 20 years old at the time, stood 5 feet 4 inches tall, and weighed 110 pounds. Her hair is long and light brown, and she has scars on her chin, above one of her eyes, and on the top of her head. Wanda's two upper front teeth turn slightly in toward one another. Her parents immediately offered up a $200 reward for information leading to Wanda's whereabouts, and the lack of press coverage suggests that the police weren't going out of their way to look for her, something that was all too common at the time, and realistically still common today. Fred Pretty filed for divorce shortly after Wanda disappeared, which became final the following December. He stayed in the area. Wanda's parents never heard from their daughter again, and she remains missing at the time of this recording, almost 42 years later. A couple years after Wanda Pretty's disappearance, And just months before the slayings took place at the Crossroads Tavern, another woman vanished from the area. 29-year-old Catherine Elizabeth Collins, who went by Kathy, was living in a Lolita rent house near the town's fire station with her 3-year-old son, Josh. Lolita, Texas is located about 18 miles northeast of Port Lavaca. Kathy recently worked for the company Brown & Root Industrial in Bay City, though she had recently quit and moved to Lolita from Blessing, Texas about a month prior. On the morning of Wednesday, April 1, 1981, Kathy dropped her son off at her boyfriend's parents' home and traveled to Port Lavaca for a doctor's appointment and to do some grocery shopping. Because she was buying groceries and needed to pay the doctor's office, it was reported that Kathy was carrying a substantial sum of cash. At 8:45 a.m., just as she crossed Lavaca Bay into Port Lavaca, on Texas State Highway 35, in front of what used to be a restaurant called The Shellfish, Kathy pulled to the side of the road. Her brown 1974 Chevrolet Caprice with Arkansas plates had developed a flat tire. As Kathy inspected the tire, a couple driving past saw that the woman might need a hand, so they pulled over. Either no one had a jack or the jack they had was in disrepair, it's unclear, but the couple left to retrieve one after attempting and failing to assist Kathy. Not long after, a light-colored van pulled to the side of the road. 4 witnesses would later report to police that they saw Kathy and the van's driver just outside of her vehicle, the last time the 29-year-old woman was ever seen. The car, tire still flat, was found later by police. At the time, Kathy stood 5 feet 5 inches tall, weighed around 125 pounds, and has brown hair and brown eyes. She has 2 surgical scars from hernia operations, as well as a small scar on her upper lip. When Kathy Collins vanished, investigators learned of a possible connection to the August 1978 disappearance of Wanda Pretty. A witness described a similar van in the area where Wanda disappeared from the night she was last seen. When detectives were investigating Kathy's case, they spoke with the owner of this van, who told police he knew both women, but claimed no knowledge of their fates. A case against the man could not be made. The police had no evidence. Other than admitting to knowing both women and being on parole for a sexual assault conviction at the time, police had nothing to go on, they said. This man died in Grayson County in 1991 at 38 years old. In June of 2001, Port Lavaca detectives thought they got a break when they received a call from the Texas Missing Persons Center. It was a call about Wanda Pretty. They thought a Jane Doe found 23 years prior in Iowa matched Wanda's description well enough to investigate the possibility that the 2 young women were one and the same. Hair color, eye color, height, weight, and scar information all matched. Not only that, the timeline was spot on too. The Iowa Jane Doe was found only 2 months after Wanda went missing. Wanda's mother gladly provided DNA to compare against a tissue sample taken from the unidentified young woman. For better or worse, however, the samples did not match. The unidentified woman, known as Lyon County, Iowa Jane Doe, for nearly 28 years, was finally given her name back in 2006. She was Wilma June Nissen of California. Both Wanda Pretty and Kathy Collins' whereabouts remain unknown to this day. If you have any information about the disappearances of Wanda Pretty or Catherine Collins, please contact the Port Lavaca Police at 361-552-3788. And if you have any information about the 1981 slayings at the Crossroads Tavern, please contact Calhoun County Crime Stoppers at 361-552-2274. You can support Gone Cold Podcast at patreon.com /GoneColdPodcast, and donors at all levels get the show ad-free. For just $2.50, too, you'll have exclusive access to Patreon-only episodes featuring stories of mostly solved Texas crimes and the bad actors who perpetrated them. Patreon-exclusive episodes include the atrocious Riverside Village Massacre, the Butcher Painter, and the Desert Killer, among others. Thanks to everyone who supports us there. We appreciate y'all's support beyond words. The Victoria Advocate and the Austin American Statesman were used as sources for this episode, and KHOU Houston was used as a source for our update on Susan Eads' case. Thanks for listening, y'all.